You know, whenever you find out that someone's going to have a baby, everyone tells them how difficult it's going to be. And that's very true, like how tired you're going to be, and it's a lot of work. And all those things are true, but no one can tell you how much you're going to love this person. You can't express it, like that. You don't know until it happens. And it's just, it's such a nice time.
Hello, reader. I'm Bianca Schultz from the Children's Book Review, and this is the Growing Readers Podcast. Today's super cool guest is your favorite author and illustrator, Bob Shea. We talk about lots of things, including the importance of reading for fun, and of course, his latest funny book, I Am a Baby. Bob Shea is the author, illustrator, and author-illustrator of so many well-loved picture books and chapter books, including the Ballet Cat and Dinosaur Versus series, as well as Unicorn Thinks It's Pretty Great, Unicorn Is Maybe Not So Great After All, Crash Splash Moo, and Who Wet My Pants, which was illustrated by Zachariah Ohora. Bob Shea's characters and animations have appeared on Nick Jr., Playhouse Disney, and PBS Kids. He lives in Connecticut. And here's the book synopsis for I Am a Baby. From the creator of the mega popular Dinosaur Versus series comes a hilariously deadpan look at new parenthood from a baby's point of view.
I am not sleepy. I am not sleepy because I am a baby. Mommy is sleepy. Mommy is sleepy because I am a baby.
With humor and sympathy, Bob Shea looks at the chaos of life with a baby, narrated by the new arrival, repeating the mantra and blithe explanation.
Because I am a baby.
The tiny narrator leads us through scenes of exhaustion, grumpiness, squishy diapers, spilled milk, cowering kittens, and chubby, overfed pups. Oopsie! Playing against the simple matter-of-fact text are freewheeling illustrations of mess and mayhem in which the grown-up's exaggerated body language is sure to send older children into fits of giggles. With its endearing, unabashedly self-pleased star, I Am a Baby will find a place at showers, in nurseries, on parents' shelves, and in the hands of appreciative big siblings, as it celebrates the changes a little one brings, at once challenging and full of love. Well, hello, Bob. Welcome to the Growing Readers Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today to talk about your newest picture book, I Am a Baby. This might be one of the most relatable new baby books that I've ever read. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So I noticed that you dedicated this book to your wife and your son. So is this book ultimately inspired by your personal experiences with parenthood, maybe?
Yes, we have one son, and it definitely was a reflection of the roller coaster jet plane that we were on at the time, that no matter what anyone says, no one can fully explain to you what's about to happen in your life. And that's exactly where all the inspiration came from.
Yeah, that's so true. I'm a mom of three kids, and every time was a different experience, but also wholly exhausting every time. So I'm curious, how does your family, particularly your son, feel about this book?
That's funny because a lot of times he doesn't see my books because he's 18 now. So it's like he's gone. Like he's, you know, see him when he sleeps and he leaves and he's out with his friends. But he saw this one on the kitchen table and he picked it up and he thought it was really funny. He really got a kick out of it. So it was quite an endorsement from a sullen teenager.
Yeah, I love it. All right, we'll start with the end papers that show all the fun things that the starring couple did together in their pre-baby days. I found the illustrations to be really, really funny. And I think I have experienced every scene that you shared in that book. So do you want to talk us through some of the funny moments that take place?
Right. So the way that it works out in the front end papers, it's photos of the, it plays out the courtship process. So you have a music festival. It's people taking selfies. It's the mom from the book doing selfies at the music festival in her sort of bohemian clothes and, you know, at a barbecue, all these fun things. And then she starts dating. And then they're doing all kinds of fun stuff. Bicycle bill for two. They're making a snowman, dancing. It's all the things that couples do when they don't have a care in the world. And then the back end papers are, it's just shot after shot of the baby. Because that's after the baby comes is what that represents. And all the parent heads are cut out. It's just the baby.
Yeah. And that's true. That's exactly how it goes.
Oh my gosh. Just every second was documented when my son was a baby. And it was before social media. 18 years ago was like Facebook was just coming on the scene. And so it wasn't even for that. We were just like, when he was asleep, we would scroll through pictures of him.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, talk us about all the stuff that happens between those glorious end papers.
I remember one time when my son was born, we were living in Manhattan at the time. It was my wife and I. So we just had a small apartment. It was a little one bedroom apartment. And I remember my wife, my sister-in-law graciously threw a baby shower for my wife. I remember walking in the apartment and the whole apartment was just overwhelmed with baby things. And I was like, there's no way there can be this much equipment for a baby. You know, like cavemen didn't have this, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, and their babies were okay. But, so it opens up with the, with just a pile of all the equipment that you need for a little baby. Everything's reasonable, like a changing table. And I was a big fan of the Diaper Genie at the time. I don't even know if that's still a thing.
Oh my gosh. I was a big fan of the Diaper Genie too.
I didn't know that was still, I was like, this seems pretty handy, but it's the weirdest thing in the world. I'm sure they're going to get rid of it.
Yeah.
But it was great.
Yeah. I feel like they have updated those, but.
Oh, they have?
I think so. I don't know. My youngest is seven now, but like, I feel like when he was born, there was like a new wave of diaper pails.
Right. And the technology is amazing. So then it's basically these new parents spending life with the baby. And basically the baby is just awake and happy all the time. And the parents, all they want to do is sleep. And then the baby, we used to call it making an H. The baby gets in bed with you and always ends up sideways so that you're a big letter H.
Yep.
Big capital H. And my wife just, I could sleep through pretty much anything, but my wife would have just supersonic hearing for whatever was going on with my son Ryan. So she really never got any sleep.
Okay, wait, I just have to interrupt. So I've always been curious about this. Like, I just thought that maybe like dads pretended they didn't hear anything. So you're saying that you really don't hear anything?
We really don't hear anything. And I'm going to tell you something else in dad's defenses. When he got a little older, like when he was a toddler, he would wake my wife was so tired all the time from hanging out with him all day. And I would tell him, you can get in bed with us, but you have to come on my side. Aww. And he would climb in on my side. So he wasn't in the middle of us kicking us. He would just kick me. So
there you go.
I can sleep on a picket fence, but I knew I wanted to let my wife get a little sleep too. Yeah.
Aww, there you go.
It's not my fault.
All right. Okay. Keep going. All right. So we have the letter H.
So I have the letter H. Yeah. Then we have, it's a lot of the classic baby things. So there's the dad, me, trying to put together the some IKEA crib, right? And all the things are all the emotions basically come back to because I am a baby. So it's daddy is grumbling because I am a baby. Kitty is hiding because I am a baby. And the little baby is just chasing the cat around the house and has him cornered underneath the sofa just to pet him. He's not going to be mean. And dropping food all over the floor and emptying the laundry basket. I remember how he used to do that all the time. That was, I don't even know why you fold clothes then. sticky tables. Everything was sticky. I would do my school visits with an iPad, and I was like, why is there, first of all, why is it always the battery dead? Why is there a layer of goo on this all the time? Everything was sticky in the house.
Yep.
It was impossible to do anything. Dad's changing the diaper. Yeah, that was always a good one. Oh, and there's a minefield of toys on the floor.
Yep.
And mom's drinking wine in the afternoon. That was the other thing. Yep. Although my wife didn't really do that, but I'm sure she wanted to. We waited till he went to sleep. We're like, is he asleep? Oh my gosh. Just tiptoe downstairs.
Yep. So we go through all of the different scenes of like just all of these moments that are just so relatable to anybody that has been a parent. And so I'm curious, out of all of the scenes, like, is there one that's your favorite or that like has the most meaning to you?
I think, you know, I think that, and this sounds a little sappy because most of them are how exhausted and you are taken out of the flow of time. You're exhausted and confused and you never know sort of really what day it is or what's going on. And my wife and I both worked at home at the time, worked for ourselves. So it wasn't even like I got that, like a parent bonus of going to an office. Like, all right, I get to escape I have to leave. I have an excuse to leave. So we were both exhausted all the time. But I think the best moment for me is when they're reading in books and he falls asleep. Because I think at the end of the day, like after all the stuff, taking him to the park and doing all the things, and it's all fun, but it is so, so tiring. And just when you finally get that sort of 10 minutes to sit quietly with your little baby and sort of enjoy the baby and everything settled down for the day and they're getting ready for bed. I think that was always my favorite time. And that's my favorite moment in the book because the parents are both reading one of my books to them. But you know, that's because
I love
you get
it.
To do that.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that was such a nice calming way to end and to show that even though it is so exhausting, there's so much love and joy that comes from bringing a baby into the world. And the way it all just kind of came full circle at the end and with those end papers of just all the pictures of the baby. I mean, it really was. I related to that moment. I mean, still read every night now just with my 7-year-old and my older two read by themselves. And it's just such a loving ritual to read every single night. So I loved that ending.
Yeah, it's a nice time. I think too, you know, whenever you find out that someone's going to have a baby, everyone tells them how difficult it's going to be. And that's very true, like how tired you're going to be and it's a lot of work. And it all those things are true, but no one can tell you how much you're going to love this person. Like you can't express it like that. You don't know until it happens. And it's such a nice time. Like all the things fall, you know, tripping on toys, dropping things, being frustrated, putting the thing together. It was a nice time in our lives. Like my wife and I look back at that and are like, that was, you know, that was a great time for our family.
Yeah. Well, so your artwork is so vibrant and entertaining. And I do have to say that I really love the little sleepy eye bag lines that you gave the parents. Because you know, mine have never gone away. So I know that they're my badge of honor for making my way through babyhood 3 times. But
I give you a lot of credit.
Yeah, I loved the little the eye bags. Those were great. But the art notes in the beginning of the book say that the illustrations were done using red and blue pencils on inexpensive printer paper and then finished on a fancy tablet while sitting in a comfortable chair by a large window. So tell me more about your experience creating the art. What does that look like?
All of those things are true. So I work. When I do my initial sketches for anything, I draw on copier paper like that. I bind myself into notebooks. I have them. They're all over my studio. And I draw on that because I used to be like, I am a professional illustrator. I'm going to get a nice sketchbook and be all fancy. And I would never want to draw on them because they're so precious. You're like, well, this drawing I have in my head is no good. I better not waste the sketchbook on that. So I would just get cheap copier paper and bind them together. So any thought I had, I could just dash it down and get it out of my head as fast as I could. But I found these these red and blue pencils. One side is red and one side is blue. And it's for correction. It's for making copy edits, but they draw really nicely and the lead is really soft. So I work out everything that way. And then I have an iPad that I do the finishes on. And I sit in a chair and it's nice. You can take it wherever. I drew one book one time down in the park, and I could by the Long Island Sound, I could take my bicycle down there, and you can sit and just you can just draw on it, and it's actually a very nice experience.
It does sound like a great experience. So tell me a little bit more about using the iPad. Are there specific like software that you like to use, or what's your go-to?
So I use a program called Procreate, which is pretty popular with illustrators right now. And the thing is with Procreate is it really mimics natural media. Like you can really, a lot of times when you use a new program, you end up drawing or creating artwork that looks like it came from that program. The nice thing about Procreate is it your style is still your style. So you are it's just convenience of having the things available to you, and whatever you put into it is what comes out the other side. It doesn't look anything like, oh, obviously you made this in other program. I don't want to trash any other programs, but Procreate's the one that I use. I also heard that there's a new one from Adobe, Fresco, that's I'm going to look into that. I hear is a very similar situation, but Procreate's been like fantastic. My whole studio is just an iPad Pro.
That's incredible. I know. I mean, it's surprised me. I think through COVID, a lot of illustrators who maybe normally use different mediums said that they tried Procreate and actually like were blown away by how it all turned out. So I am not an artist in any way. So I love learning all about it.
One of the things that COVID did for me is I did more traditional media, not for the books, but I just was like, I'm going to get back into drawing and making artwork and doing block prints and doing a lot of the things that I love doing, but in the before times never really had the opportunity to pursue. So where a lot of people were making sourdough bread, I was making prints and drawing with actual colored pencils.
Yeah, that's neat. It was like a time to explore something new, something different, or revisit something that you hadn't done for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I even did it. I do a thing on Friday afternoons where I will draw with another illustrator on Instagram live. So I emailed all these people who I've never met a lot of them. And we just sit and draw and the camera's faced at our drawings. And it's like a nice afternoon. It almost feels like back when we'd be able to get together and see people and go out to conferences and things. It's really nice.
Yeah. Well, since you're both the author and the illustrator for this title, did the art come first for this book or the text?
Oh, the text came first. It's funny. Even the originally, it was a family of seals.
Oh, that's funny.
So the baby was a baby seal.
I'm like literally trying to like visualize this right now.
Yeah, yeah. And so I wrote the text, which wasn't the same. It was a little bit different. And my editor was wonderful about it. And she was like, I like this idea. She's like, I really would like it to be people, which I've never drawn people before. I was like, okay, I sort of only draw animals because you can get away with a lot more. Like, it's just a round shape. You know, this seal is just a blob. You don't have to really make it correct. But people, you're like, oh, people are going to know. People are going to know I can't draw. So then she read the manuscript and she's like, there's something here. I like it, but you know, we need to work on it. And then that's when I came up with the repeating pattern of because I am a baby. And that, and when we had those two things in place, that's where the book really came together. So it's nice. I think, you know, and the thing is kids, even older kids, they like babies.
Yeah.
So they like to look at babies and they're very interested in what babies are doing because they have mastery over so few things when you're like a toddler or in kindergarten. So that when you see a little baby, you're like, yeah, that's cool. That's a person who doesn't know as much as I do. And they're cute.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so you seem to have this innate skill of really being able to tap into the true essence of childhood in all of your books. So why do you think that this is a skill that you have, and what motivates you to write such stories?
Oh, thank that's nice of you to say that. I think before anything else, I like to write the stories. I love each part of it for different reasons. I love illustration because I can explore different techniques, and I like modern design, and that's all great. But I think that when it's really sort of a human experience thing, it's nice to sort of pay attention to the world and sort of try to remember what it was like as a kid. And I don't mean it from like an inner child kind of way. I mean it like being a kid is difficult. Like it's hard. Like it's not like, oh, it's all fun and everything. Like there's always, you don't have any, your tools aren't developed to deal with the world, but still the things you deal with are a lot of the same things, social interactions and things that grownups deal with. So I like to think about things from a kid's point of view, and for me personally, try to find what's funny about it and what's uniquely funny about it, and then try to spin that into a way where it's more of a story and more of a, how do I say this? Like they're not morality tales, but just to sort of be like, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, like it's going to be okay. These bad things happen. Not that all my books are about bad things, but these things happen and it's going to be all right.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. No. And I think that's what you said about kids are developing and they don't have the tools to sort of cope with some of the crazy things that happen in the world, but yet we often expect them to behave in a way as though they have the tools. And I feel like your books mm-hmm. really kind of are just comforting to kids. It's funny, you know, you can really see the way you describe that. I see that coming through in your books. So that makes sense to me. Do you ever have days when, say, you're on a deadline and the creative juices just aren't flowing?
All the time. So the thing is, fortunately, when there is a deadline, it usually means that it's production. Like you have to turn it, like all the creative parts of the book are done and you are doing final illustrations. But there's a lot of days where I think I'm done. I'm never going to think of another idea again. I have to go get a job and I have no skills. And then I sit and I'm like, what can I do? I'm like, I'm getting too old to work for UPS. I can't stay on my feet that long and lift heavy things anymore. Like all my go-tos are gone. So what I usually do, another thing about doing this job, it was difficult for me to wrap my head around what work looks like, because I keep a regular schedule. I come in the morning and leave at the end of the day, every day. Like it's a regular schedule. But going for a long walk is work. Not, you know, I'm not complaining about it. I'm saying that's when I'm generating ideas. Because my brain, when it doesn't want to give you an idea, it won't. You can't sit down in front of the paper, okay, children's book, go. You know, so you have to trick it. You have to go, you know what, I'm going to walk over and to where the pond is and look at those turtles, since you're obviously not into this brain. And then you walk over there, and when you're walking over, your brain will say, hey, you know, I was thinking about that book idea you wanted me to come up with. I think I have something. You go, no, we're looking at turtles now. And then when it knows it's not getting the attention, it gives you all the ideas you want.
Oh, that's genius. I love that. Everybody says go for a walk, right? But it's focusing and looking at the turtles, and then mm-hmm. and then your brain will give it to you. Yes, I love that.
you have to I think for me, changing environments helps. Like a lot of times I can walk to my library and I'll go and I'll sit in the library and work, because the change of scenery makes your brain get excited and be like, oh, look at this new stuff. Let's think of new things. And the walk is really good because you're active, you're doing something, and you have to focus on don't fall left, right, left. You know? Yeah. So your brain sort of can go in the background and sort of work that way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have an anonymous write-in question that you may need to brace yourself for. Are you ready?
okay, go ahead.
I will say that the anonymous writer has the initials BS, and they ask, It must be a heavy burden being America's favorite author with all the accolades and well wishes wishing you well. Is it exhausting to write your fantastic books and give so much back to your legions of fans?
Oh my gosh, I'm just so glad somebody recognized all that I do for this community. Finally.
I love it. Now,
it is exhausting.
It's funny though, like the initials BS, both you and I have the same initials, BS. So now I'm like wondering who actually wrote this question.
Right. Those initials, they've come in handy for me over the years.
Yeah, they are very handy.
Do a lot of things.
All right. Well, Bob, to be a writer, a lot of people say that you need to be a reader first. Was there a pivotal moment in which you considered yourself a reader?
I think more in retrospect, I realized that that was the case. I think when I was growing up, being an author, and even there was no emphasis on reading and there was no emphasis on, oh, you can be an author. You know, it just was where I grew up and the time. But I would read all the time. I was reading Encyclopedia Brown, and there was a series called The Great Brain. Other kids weren't doing that. Like now I go into schools and all the kids read and all the kids know what all the different books are, and they're excited for them to come out. In my school when I grew up, it wasn't that way. I think now I realize that I was a reader from, I must have been like 10 years old.
I love the Encyclopedia Brown books. You said Big Brain.
Oh, the Great Brain.
Oh, Great Brain. That sounds so familiar to me, but I can't think what it was. What was it about? Was it like mystery or?
No, it wasn't mystery. It was a little boy who was supposed to be very, very smart. And I think it was, you're putting me on the spot now. I can't remember. I think it was like the 1800s. And I think he was like, he would come up with clever things to do. They were never malicious. Like he wasn't a bad kid. He would always be like, how to make money and put on a show and do all this stuff. But it was always, he was much more clever than the adults were in the world. And then Encyclopedia Brown, they were short. I'm not going to lie. I'd get them. I'd go, I can get through this story. Cause it would be like one book would have like four or five stories in it. And I'd be like, I can get through these. No problem.
Yeah. I mean, I love that chapter book series are great. I mean, and I love your early reader series, The Ballet Cat, but it's so fun when kids can just like, you can just make their way through a book so fast. I think that's empowering, right? And then there's another one ready for them to go. So I love that.
I do. I try to remind myself of that all the time. Like, well, I'm trying to write a chapter book right now, and I'm consciously keeping the chapters as short as I possibly can to keep it the momentum moving, so you don't start a new chapter, because I used to do this when I was little, and you look ahead to see, you'd be like, oh, this chapter's like 6 pages long, how am I gonna get through this,
right? And you don't you don't want to put the bookmark in the middle of the chapter. Like, you want to put it at the start of the chapter, at least I do.
I was like, oh, how am I gonna get, I'm not starting this, I'll never get to the end. I want the kids to turn the page and go, oh, the next page ends halfway down the page. That's a good one. Yeah. You know, there's a big blank space for me to go. And you're like, every time you turn a page, you're like, yeah, turn the page. So
yes, it's rewarding.
I remember that stuff.
It's rewarding. Well, so, I mean, I think you and I and our listeners, you know, we're book people, right? We love books. You're not listening to this podcast if you don't enjoy reading in some kind of form, right? And so I imagine. So, you know, I see my kids reading, and you see kids reading, and you visit schools, and the kids are very excited to see you, and they love it. But when I take a step back and I read statistics, the statistics is saying that even less kids read for fun now. So here's some stats that I have from the Pew Research Center. And they said the shares of American 9 and 13 year olds who say they read for fun on almost daily basis have dropped from nearly a decade ago and are at the lowest levels since at least the mid 1980s. And that was according to a survey in late 2019 and early 2020 by the National Assessment of Educational Progress. But the article went on to say that students who performed better on the reading section of standardized tests in 2020 reported reading for fun more frequently. So since you've got experience making animations for PBS Kids and you mm-hmm. helped them develop a national literacy campaign, what do you think would help boost the number of kids who read for fun? Because sometimes I think the secret is as simple as reading to kids from the moment they're babies and then making sure that a large helping of those books are just lots of fun. Like, what are your thoughts?
I agree with that 100%. I think about as I was just describing, first of all, when I was real little, books were all over the house for me, like picture books. My mother had joined this, it was like a Random House club where they would come in the mail every month. So every month she'd pull a cardboard box out of the mail and be like, here, you got another book. And they were just around the house on the floor, like the same value to me as toys, you know, they were there. So I just read them. And when I started reading, when I went into like middle school and elementary school, it was for fun because I thought that was a fun thing to do. No one had to coax me into it. And again, like I said, with Encyclopedia Brown, I read those because I could read it because it was short and it was fun to read. I think that's it exactly. These things have to be super fun and engaging. There's so much competition now. I'll tell you, if there was Netflix and all this kind of stuff, and if there just was the internet when I was a little kid, I don't know that I would have been reading that much. Too much competition for eyeballs right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So keeping it fun and keeping lots of books and different genres that pique interests. Like, I think all of this.
You got to see what you like. I mean, my son never read any fantasy stuff and he knew it would have to be realistic fiction. And that's fine. I was never like, you should read a variety of things. I was glad he was reading things.
Yeah.
And the same, like, again, when I was a kid, if somebody had foisted something on me that I wasn't interested in, I would have been like, reading's terrible. Like, why don't, it's a chore. Reading's a chore.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, he went through that when he was in middle school. He had teachers, and it was only one, I'm specifically one, who made it very a chore. Like, he loved reading. And then he was like, every page I have to do this thing and whatever, however it was. But it really just knocked the enjoyment of it out of it. And he started to see books as not a source of entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that for so many people. So on the topic of reading fun books, you've published mm-hmm. so many of them. I don't know what your official count is right now.
Oh, me neither.
But, you know, Shezbob came out last fall, and the fan favorite, Who Wet My Pants, illustrated by Zach O'Hara. What should we expect to see from you next? Is there anything you're allowed to talk to us about?
Oh yeah, I have another one coming out pretty soon. First of all, Shea Bob has a sequel that I'm working on now, and that's kind of a big secret. I guess I shouldn't have told you. It doesn't matter. And then I have a series of a board book series I'm really excited about because I didn't draw it. So it's much more exciting for me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't look at the illustrations and go, oh, I should have changed that. Why didn't I do that differently? So I look at it and I'm going, wow, he did a really good job with this. It's called A Durable. It's little pups in big trucks and it's puppies in construction vehicles.
Aw.
It's perfect. And it's a board book. But the thing is, they're not heroic in any way. They're like toddlers, so they're pretty incompetent. but it's like if you put a toddler in a heavy machinery, that's what it's like. So I was really excited about it. So that comes out in a few weeks too.
Oh, that's super fun. I think there's going to be lots of kids that want to gobble those books up for sure.
I hope so.
So when we were kind of before talking about the question from the anonymous write-in question, I thought of another question, like, you know, because you do visit schools and you do your Instagram lives and, you know, surely there are people that tell you how they feel about your work or describe your work. So I'm curious, like off the top of your head, what's the nicest thing anybody's ever said about your work?
You know, the nicest thing anyone's ever said about my work probably happened about a month ago when I was getting ready to do a Zoom visit, and I was chatting with the librarian beforehand, and she was saying, oh, you know, we love your stuff, blah, blah, blah. And then she said, I heard a little girl explain to a little boy what your books were. And because he was like, oh, what does Bob Shea write? And the little girl said to him, oh, he writes comedy.
Aww.
And that's, I was like, that is all I've ever wanted to hear.
Yeah. Yes. I love a good, just simply fun book. And
yeah,
on this continuous topic of fun, this has been really fun talking to you, Bob. So before we go, I want to go back full circle and finish up with what you hope readers will take away from reading I Am a Baby.
Oh, I hope that parents can relate to it and find a little humor in this whole shared experience that parents have. and that because it would be fun to watch little kids read it, because they won't exactly know what's going on, but they'll think it's funny anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And I just think, like, what a great baby shower gift, a great gift for an older sibling. And I feel like as a parent now, I will not have any more babies, but giving your book to another parent will bring me so much joy. You know, I just think it's so great. I loved every second of it, right down to the little eye bags, like I said before.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Bob. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. And I just think this book is going to be a huge hit, and we can't wait to see all the new books that you have coming too.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us on this quest for growing readers. Be sure to check out our show notes. You'll find links to order a copy of Bob Shea's I Am a Baby. To see which author and illustrator guests we have coming up and how you can be on our podcast and have your questions answered by authors and illustrators, visit us at thechildrensbookreview.com/thegrowingreaderspodcast. If you like this show, remember, you can hear it on Apple Podcasts, Chromecast, Spotify, or anywhere else you enjoy listening. Subscribe to the show to get new episodes as soon as they launch. If you're enjoying our book chats, please leave us a review, and while you're at it, tell a friend to come and have a listen. The Growing Readers Podcast is a production of the Children's Book Review. To discover more fantastic books, I hope you'll visit us at thechildrensbookreview.com.